This week, who really was Hermes Trismegistus? An amalgamation of three or more individuals? Four individuals? Five individuals? This week, we'll look into the character as described by Albert Mackey as the secretary of Osiris. We'll wrap it up with an article that looks at the overall contemporary view of Hermes Trismegistus as the idea entered the world, lived, and its decline. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 566. I want to thank the producers, contributors, fellows, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast for all of your support over the years. Since July of 2011, the Whence Came You podcast has been creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is no small endeavor, requiring hours of work each week on top of what we all have, kids, spouses. And if you visit WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and you can find several ways to give through PayPal subscription, Patreon, and PayPal single gifts. Both Patreon and PayPal subscriptions have the same tiers. I invite you to join us in producing the WCY podcast. In the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Coincidence? Well, let's keep this ship on course. Thank you for your decision to join us, or for sharing our episodes and even considering it. In the news, I just got back from the Grand Lodge sessions at the State of Illinois. We had a great 2-day sessions, lots of awesome fellowship, harmonious sessions at that, with some legislation that had the potential for rousing people's emotions. Everybody in the auditorium behaved as Masons. It was a proud day, regardless of the way the legislation went. I want to congratulate worshipful brother David Truax for his election into the east of the Illinois Lodge of Research. We'll have the up-to-date leadership as well as contact information posted to the Illinois Lodge of Research website. We'll also be emailing out the transactions, over 92 pages of quality Masonic education edited by the one and only Hilton Kaufman. Upcoming trips and or places we're going to do some great stuff. If you're listening to this on October 9th, in just 2 days, I'll be doing a roundtable discussion for the Kansas Lodge of Research. So if you're a member there or you are allowed to get on, feel free to join us. We are going to be discussing, I'll be moderating the discussion, a topic called What Really Changed After Initiation. Again, a roundtable discussion. We're going to discuss the process of initiation and what exactly changed within us after an initiation. Is it like a light switch, a gradual change, or something else? Should be an enlightening evening. And then, of course, on 10/15, October 15th, literally this upcoming weekend, MasonicCon South. You can get your tickets to MasonicCon South at MasonicConSouth.com. It'll be at Greensboro Masonic Temple. We're going to be doing a live taping of the Masonic Roundtable, our 400th episode. It's going to be very special, in addition to the presentations by illustrious Brother Jim Cole, the Sovereign Grand Commander of the Southern Jurisdiction, as well as Most Worshipful Brother Sean Bradshaw. We've got Worshipful Brother John Ruark, Worshipful Brother Joe Martinez, Worshipful Brother Jason Richards, and myself, as well as Brother P.D. Newman. Within that conference, I am super excited about a new presentation that Brother Jason Richards is doing about death and Freemasonry and NDEs and that kind of thing. That's near-death experiences for those of you who didn't know. And really looking forward to this presentation. Also, if you had been in North Carolina a few years ago, Brother John Ruark and I went out to a lodge, and we presented together. He did a presentation right after my one that I did, and they blended so well together that Worshipful Brother Matt Parker has asked us to do this again. So John is going to be up first, and I'll go second. We're just after lunch, but don't worry, we'll keep you awake. Hopefully you find the two presentations in congruity with each other, and they add to your spiritual arsenal. if you will. So what are we talking about this week? Well, this week I was thinking that we would talk a little bit about a character called Hermes Trismegistus, or Hermes Trismegistus, and exactly what this is, because there's a lot of misinformation about this character or characters, right? It's Hermes the thrice great, but he's thrice because he is an amalgamation of three people, so on and so forth. Well, we did read a paper a while back by brother Matt on the program. He had a complimentary article called A Handshake for Hermes, but it really wasn't getting into the origin, history, and esoteric nature of what Hermes is. So I thought we would dig in and learn together about Hermes Trismegistus. Get ready to become a subject matter expert right now. Direct from several attributed and cited works, the following can be said of Hermes Trismegistus. Hermes Trismegistus, from the ancient Greek, Hermes the thrice greatest, in classical Latin, is a legendary Hellenistic figure. So let's stop right there. What is Hellenistic? Well, the Hellenistic period of the classical antiquity spans from the period of the Mediterranean history between the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC and the emergence of the Roman Empire, as signified by the Battle of Actium in 31 BC or BCE. Now, this figure originated as a syncretic combination of the Greek god Hermes and the Egyptian god Thoth, or Jehuti. He is the purported author of the Hermetica, a widely diverse series of ancient and medieval pseudepigraphical texts that lay the basis of various philosophical systems known as Hermeticism. Now, what does pseudepigraphical mean? Well, this is a word that means falsely attributed works, texts whose claimed author is not the true author, or a work whose real author is attributed to a figure of the past. So the wisdom attributed to this figure, Hermes Trismegistus, in antiquity combined a knowledge of both the material and the spiritual world, which rendered the writings attributed to him of great relevance to those who were interested in the interrelationship between the material and the divine. The figure of Hermes Trismegistus can also be found in both Islamic and Baha'i writings. In those traditions, Hermes Trismegistus has been associated with the prophet Idris. Now, according to the proper sources, let's talk about his origin and identity. Hermes Trismegistus may be associated with the Greek god Hermes and the Egyptian god Thoth, or Thoth, Jehuti, etc. Greeks in the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt recognized the equivalence of Hermes and Thoth through the Interpersio-Graecia, and what this is short for is essentially just saying an archetype or a character. Consequently, the two gods were worshipped as one in what had been the Temple of Thoth in Kemenu, which was known in the Hellenistic period as Hermopolis. Hermes, the Greek god of interpretive communication, was combined with Thoth, the Egyptian god of wisdom. The Egyptian priest and polymath Imhotep had been deified long after his death and therefore assimilated to Thoth in the classical and Hellenistic period. The renowned scribe Amenhotep and wise man named Teos were co-equal deities of wisdom, science, and medicine, and thus they were placed alongside Imhotep in shrines dedicated to Thoth Hermes during the Ptolemaic Kingdom. A Mycenaean Greek reference to a deity or semi-deity called Tiri Seroe Tresheros, or thrice or triple hero, was found on two linear B clay tablets at Pylos, and could be connected to the later epitaph, thrice great, Trismegistus, applied to Hermes or Thoth. On the aforementioned PYTN-316 tablet, Tiri Seroa, as well as other Linear B tablets found in Pylos, Knossos, and Thebes, there appears the name of the deity Hermes Asemaha, but not in any apparent connection with Tresheros, or thrice hero. This interpretation of poorly understood Mycenaean material is disputed, since Hermes Trismegistus is not referenced in any of the copious sources before he emerges in Hellenistic Egypt. Cicero enumerates several deities referred to as Hermes. A fourth, Mercury, or Hermes, was the son of the Nile, whose name may not be spoken by the Egyptians, and a fifth, who is worshipped by the people of Phineus in Arcadia, is said to have killed Argus Panoptes, and for this reason, to have fled to Egypt, and to have given the Egyptians their laws and alphabet. He, it is, whom the Egyptians called Thet. The most likely interpretation of this passage is as two variants on the same syncretism of Greek Hermes and Egyptian Thoth, or sometimes other gods. The fourth, where Hermes turns out actually to have been a son of the Nile, examples being a native god, being viewed from the Egyptian perspective, the fifth, who went from Greece to Egypt, being viewed from the Greek Arcadian perspective. Both of these early references in Cicero, most ancient Trismegistus material is from the early centuries AD or CE, corroborate the view that thrice great Hermes originated in Hellenistic Egypt through syncretism between Greek and Egyptian gods. The Hermetica refers most often to Thoth and Amun, as in Amun-Ra. The Hermetic literature among the Egyptians, which was concerned with conjuring spirits and animating statues, informed the oldest Hellenistic writings on Greco-Babylonian astrology and on the newly developed practice of alchemy. In parallel traditions, Hermetic philosophy rationalized and systematized religious cult practices and offered the adept a means of personal ascension from the constraints of physical being. This latter tradition has led to the confusion of Hermeticism with Gnosticism, which was developing contemporaneously. The epithet of the thrice great. Foudan asserts that the first datable occurrences of the epithet thrice great are in the Legatio of the Athenagoras of Athens, and in a fragment from Philo of Byblos, circa AD 64 to 141. However, in the later work, Copenhaver reports that this epithet is first found in the minutes of a meeting of the Council of Ibis cult held in 172 BC near Memphis, Egypt. Hart explains that the epithet is derived from the epithet of Thoth found at the Temple of Esna. Thoth, the Great, the Great, the Great. Many Christian writers, including Lactantius, Augustine, Marsilio Ficino, Campanella, and Giovanni Pico della Mirandola, as well as Giordano Bruno, considered Hermes Trismegistus to be a wise pagan prophet who foresaw the coming of Christianity. They believed in the existence of the Prisca Theologia, a single true theology that threads through all religions. It was given by God to man in antiquity, and passed through a series of prophets, which included Zoroaster and Plato. In order to demonstrate the verity of the Prisca Theologia, Christians appropriated the Hermetic teachings for their own purposes. By this account, Hermes Trismegistus was either a contemporary of Moses or the third in a line of men named Hermes, examples being Enoch, Noah, and the Egyptian priest king, who is known to us as Hermes Trismegistus, on account of being the greatest priest, philosopher, and king. Another explanation in the Suda, 10th century, is that he was called Trismegistus on account of his praise of the Trinity, saying there is one divine nature in the Trinity. Let's now look at the Hermetic writings. During the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, the Hermetica enjoyed great prestige and were popular among alchemists. Hermes was also strongly associated with astrology, for example, by the influential Islamic astrologer Abu Mashar al-Balkhi, 787-886. The Hermetic tradition consequently refers to alchemy, magic, astrology, and related subjects. The texts are usually divided into two categories, the philosophical and the technical Hermetica. The former deals mainly with philosophy, and the latter with practical magic, potions, and alchemy. The expression, hermetically sealed, comes from the alchemical procedure to make the philosopher's stone. This required a mixture of materials to be placed in a glass vessel, which was sealed by fusing the neck closed, a procedure known as the seal of Hermes. The vessel was then heated for 30 to 40 days. During the Renaissance, it was accepted that Hermes Trismegistus was a contemporary of Moses. However, after Isaac Casaubon's demonstration in 1614, that the Hermetic writings must post-date the advent of Christianity, the whole of the Renaissance Hermeticism collapsed. As to their actual authorship, quote, "They were certainly not written in remotest antiquity by an all-wise Egyptian priest, as the Renaissance believed, but by various unknown authors, all probably Greeks, and they contain popular Greek philosophy of the period. A mixture of Platonism and Stoicism combined with some Jewish and probably some Persian influences." End quote. Various critical editions of the Hermetica have been published in modern academia, such as Hermetica by Brian Copenhaver, The Islamic Tradition. Antoine Favre in The Eternal Hermes, 1995, has pointed out that Hermes Trismegistus has a place in the Islamic tradition. Although the name Hermes does not appear in the Quran, hagiographers and chroniclers of the first century of Islamic Hijra quickly identified Hermes Trismegistus with Idris, the Islamic prophet of Suras, 19:5-7 and 21:8-5, whom Muslims also identified with Enoch, Genesis 5:18-24. According to the account of Persian astrologer Abu Mashar al-Balkhi, Idris Hermes was termed thrice wise, Hermes Trismegistus, because he had a threefold origin. The first Hermes, comparable to Thoth, was a civilizing hero, an initiator into the mysteries of the divine science and wisdom that animate the world. He carved the principles of this sacred science in hieroglyphs. The second Hermes, in Babylon, was the initiator of Pythagoras. The third Hermes was the first teacher of alchemy, a faceless prophet, writes the Islamicist Pierre Loury. Quote, Hermes possesses no concrete or salient characteristics, differing in this regard from most of the major figures of the Bible and the Quran. End quote. The star-worshipping sect, known as the Sabians of Haran, also believed that the doctrine descended from Hermes Trismegistus. There are at least 20 Arabic Hermetica extant. While some of these Arabic Hermetic writings were translated from Greek or Middle Persian, some were originally written in Arabic. Hermetic fragments are also found in the works of Arabic alchemists, such as Jabir ibn Hayyan, who died in 806-816, and is cited in an early version of the Emerald Tablet in his book, and Ibn Umayl, circa 900-960, quoted and commented upon the Hermetic sayings throughout his work. Among them also a commentary on the Emerald Tablet. In Baha'i writings, the founder of the Baha'i faith identifies Idris with Hermes in his tablet on the uncompounded reality. In classical literature, the first verses of Baudelaire's Les Fleurs du Mal refer to Satan Trismegistus, who pulls human puppet strings to rule the world. That image echoed Plato's dialogues. The verses are the following. On evil's pillow, Satan Trismegistus rocks our spirit, enchanted by the subtle chemist, the wills, precious metals turn to vapor. So this is what we know about Hermes in the most objective scientific sort of way, an odd character through and through. But what do some popular websites have to say about Hermes the Thrice Great? Well, here is one that came from ancientorigins.net. Links will be posted to take you directly to ancientorigins.net, where I strongly encourage you get their emails. They have a number of very tantalizing and interesting concepts. Thoth Hermes Trismegistus and His Ancient School of Mysteries. Katrina Sisowath. AncientOrigins.net. Thoth Hermes Trismegistus is portrayed by the Egyptians as a moon god with the body of man, the head of an ibis, and a crescent moon over his head. His symbol was the winged serpent staff. He was the god of wisdom, letters, and time. But he was not only known to the Egyptians. To the Sumerians, he was Enkidu. He may have been Enoch to the Jews, Odin to the Scandinavians, Wotan to the Teutons, and some even suggest Buddha. Before he was revered as a god, he was the first great Egyptian philosopher and founder of the ancient mystery schools, receiving his wisdom while in a meditative trance, writing over 400 books, including, and allegedly, the Emerald Tablet, the Book of Thoth, and the Divine Pymander, with the Book of Thoth only being given to his enlightened initiates of the mysteries. Thoth's teachings and the Book of Thoth. The topics he covered ranged from medicine, chemistry, law, art, music, rhetoric, magic, philosophy, geography, mathematics, and anatomy, and oratory. To the Egyptians, his knowledge was so vast and all-encompassing that they first began to credit him as the communicator with the gods, eventually inducting him into the Egyptian pantheon. Whether or not one agrees his is the hand that penned the books attributed to him, a quick perusal or in-depth study resounds in most readers due to the similarity with Buddhism and Christianity. Perhaps the clearest examples are his teachings on reincarnation and the creation of the world. Nothing is for certain about the Book of Thoth other than the fact that it was written in Egyptian hieroglyphics. It was kept in a golden box in the inner sanctuary of the temple, and only the highest initiate of the Hermetic Arcana Mystery School had a key to it. It is said, the book described, the key to immortality, the process achieved through awakening certain areas of the brain similar to the Buddhist monks' practices. Gardner and other authors have claimed the awakening of the brain was achieved through meditation, the use of a white powder, and the priestess's sacred essence. Thoth's Mystery Schools. The most powerful of the mystery schools was known as the Royal School of the Master Craftsmen at Karnak, founded by Pharaoh Thutmosis III. Though, as with all the mystery schools, it is commonly believed that the true founders resided in Sumeria, emigrating to Egypt, which ties into Sitchin's claims that Enki and his sons, including Ningizida, had Magan, or Egypt, as their domain. This school was also known as the Great White Brotherhood due to the members' choice of garment, white robes, and their dedication to producing the white powder known to the Mesopotamians as Shem'an-Na, the High Ward Firestone, or white bread, to the Egyptians. Pictures of it show being offered to the pharaohs in the shape of a cone. Shem'an-Na, the white bread of ancient Egyptians. On the top of Mount Sinai, Petrie discovered an Egyptian temple which contained a bewildering discovery. Laying some inches deep beneath heavy flagstones in a storeroom was a considerable supply of the finest, pure, white, unadulterated powder. Copper smelting and animal sacrifice were quickly ruled out. Some of the mysterious powder was taken back to Britain for analysis and examination, but no results were ever published. The rest was left open to the elements after 3,000 years to become a victim of the desert winds. What has become apparent, however, is that this powder was seemingly identical to the ancient Mesopotamian firestone, or Shem'an-Na, the substance that was made into bread cakes and used to feed the Babylonian kings and the pharaohs of Egypt. This, of course, explains the temple inscriptions denoting the importance of bread and light. While the white powder, the Shem'an-Na, has been identified with the sacred manna that Aaron placed in the Ark of the Covenant. What happened to the Book of Thoth? Eventually, the mystery schools went into a decline as the new dynasties emerged. The initiates left Egypt and brought the Book of Thoth to another land, where it is now, no one knows, though supposedly the chain of succession of the Grand Master since Thoth has remained unbroken. The Rosicrucians are said to have been descended from this school, while the Freemasons are descended from the school founded by Solomon. As for Thoth himself, he has remained revered by philosophers, occultists, alchemists, and healers through the ages, though many of the texts accredited to him were lost in the great fire of the Library of Alexandria. Who knows how different history might have been had the knowledge contained in that library not been lost. So that we have kind of this more, I suppose, a flashy and intriguing look into this archetypal character of the Egyptian origin, or maybe earlier, Sumerian even. What is this white bread, the Shem'an-Na, that kept them living so long? That is going to be likely the topic of some additional research. So what does a Masonic book like perhaps Mackey's have to do with this character? What does he say of it? There is an entry for Hermes. Let's take a look. In all of the old manuscripts, records which contain the legend of the craft, mention is made of Hermes as one of the founders of Freemasonry. Thus, in the Grand Lodge Manuscript No. 1, whose date is 1583, and the statement is substantially and almost verbally the same in all of the others, that Hermes, the father of wisdom, he found one of the two pillars of stone and found science written therein, and he taught it to other men. There are two persons of the name of Hermes mentioned in sacred history. The first is the divine Hermes, called by the Romans Mercury. Among the Egyptians, he was known as Thoth. Diodorus Siculus describes him as the secretary of Osiris. He is commonly supposed to have been the son of Mizraim, and Cumberland says that he was the same as Osiris. There is, however, much confusion among the mythologists concerning his attributes. The second was Hermes Trismegistus, or the thrice great, who is a celebrated Egyptian legislator, priest, and philosopher, who lived in the region of Ninus about the year of the world 2670. He is said to have written 36 books on theology and philosophy and 6 upon medicine, all of which are lost. There are many traditions of him, one of which, related by Eusebius, is that he introduced hieroglyphics into Egypt. This Hermes Trismegistus, although the reality of this existence is doubtful, was claimed by the alchemists as the founder of their art, whence it is called the Hermetic science, and whence we get in Freemasonry Hermetic rites and Hermetic degrees. It is to him that the legend of the craft refers, and indeed the York constitutions, which are of importance, though not probably of the date of 926 assigned to them by Krauss, give him that title, and say that he brought the custom of making himself understood by signs with him to Egypt. In the first ages of the Christian Church, this mythical Egyptian philosopher was, in fact, considered as the inventor of everything known to the human intellect. It was fabled that Pythagoras and Plato had derived their knowledge from him, and that he had recorded his innovations on pillars. The operative masons who wrote the old constitutions obtained their acquaintance with him from the Polychromicon and the monk Ranulf Higden, which was translated from the Latin by Trevisa and printed by Willem Caxton in 1482. It is repeatedly quoted in the Cook manuscript, whose probable date is the latter part of the 15th century, and was undoubtedly familiar in the writers of the other constitution. Last but not least, I want to read a shorter piece on this from a website called To Salem, celebrating Salem witchcraft, history, and Halloween. Hermes Trismegistus, the Greek god, symbol, mythology, and history. One of the more fascinating explorations of the collective Western metaphysical tradition is learning more about the teachers who had led the way toward where witchcraft, alchemy, magic, and more are today. Among this pantheon of philosophers, magicians, scientists, occultists, and practitioners, perhaps none cast so long a shadow as the legendary figure of Hermes Trismegistus. In his time on this planet, the mythic Hermes was traveled from his nebulous origins to his rightful place as a cornerstone of the Renaissance to an outright fraud to one of the forefathers of occultism. The best introduction of Hermes Trismegistus, the thrice greatest one, is his mythology. Essentially, the figure we know as Hermes is an amalgamation of a handful of Greek, Egyptian, and Christian influences. So in order to properly track the evolution of the Hermes god myth, let's journey all the way back to the time of the pharaohs in ancient Egypt. Egyptian god Thoth. The people of ancient Egypt began worshipping an ibis-headed figure by the name of Thoth, starting at around 3000 BCE, or before the Common Era. Thoth was the god of the moon, speech, leading souls to the underworld, and learning and writing. Thoth was a central figure to the ancient Egyptians, who often depicted him alongside Ra in the solar collective. So important was Thoth to the ancient Egyptians that every year they sacrificed thousands of ibises in his honor. There's a lot more to be learned from Thoth, but for now, let's jump forward to the time of 600 BCE and ancient Greece. Hermes, the Greek god. The next major influence in the Hermes mythology and the development of Hermes god came from Greece. Starting around 600 BCE, travelers along the voyages began lining crossroads and property divisions with small piles of stones, or cairns. Over time, the Greeks evolved these dividing or guiding stones, now called herms, into outright works of art. All over ancient Egypt, phallic pillars and statues came to represent an emergent god in the Greek pantheon by the name of Hermes. What is Hermes the god of? He's the Greek god of crossroads, travel, thieves, bankers, and no small amount of trickery. He also acts as the messenger between the gods and man, and, like Thoth, helps to guide souls through the underworld. Thoth and Hermes combine. It's unclear at exactly what point the Hermes Greek god and the Egyptian Thoth were conflated. We do know that it happened in Greek Alexandria, where all manner of old and new world ideas from ancient Egypt and contemporary Greece were combining and transforming. By the 2nd century CE, a figure going by the name of Hermes Trismegistus had emerged in popular folklore. This figure, however, was both similar and entirely distinct from either the Egyptian Thoth or Greek Hermes god. Perhaps the most important distinction was that this incarnation was actually supposed to have walked the planet Earth. All about Hermes Trismegistus. This new figure wouldn't actually be discovered by the people who would go on to endear him to the modern world until some 1,200 years later. But we'll get back to that in the sections below. For now, let's have a look at the new Hermes Trismegistus fellow as a mythic figure. Hermes supposedly walked the planet in the pre-flood era. Several believers, or hermeticists, as they would go on to be known, even claim that he was a contemporary of Moses. He was a mythic guiding light for all who might seek esoteric knowledge or spiritual wisdom. He reportedly invented magic, writing, civilization itself, art, astrology, medicine, music, alchemy, and a whole lot more. The Corpus Hermeticum. In addition to all of his world-defining creations, he also supposedly authored thousands of texts. Some of these went on to survive in the modern world as the Corpus Hermeticum or Hermetica. This is another area we'll revisit when we get to Hermes' history sections below. For now, it's important to know that the Hermetica supposedly contained divine knowledge delivered to Hermes Trismegistus during his lifetime. If true, the esoteric secrets contained within this collection of texts would essentially be the original philosophy from which all others in the West and much of the East evolved. In his fantastic book, The Secret Teachers of the Western World, author Gary Lachman refers to this philosophy as the Prisca Theologia. According to Lachman, such a perennial philosophy is crucial to the development of all major Western religions and spiritual schools. The Hermeticists would have us believe, then, that the figure of Hermes Trismegistus is the single source from which all religious thought, philosophy, and everything that sprang from them. So, in essence, the entire Western world emerged. It's no small wonder why his myth and legendary acts persist to this day. The Hermes symbol. Another important factor in the Hermes god myth was Hermes' symbol, which modern Westerners are no doubt familiar. The caduceus pictured represents the mythic man's staff. The caduceus was among the most powerful of the Hermes symbols and went on to be used in alchemy, astrology, astronomy, and more. It depicts two serpents copulating around a winged staff. As a magical tool, the caduceus is often used to commune with the Greek gods or his Roman counterpart Mercury, or to bless any dealings having to do with commercial or travel. Hermes history. Unfortunately, the historical accuracy of Hermes' myth is undercut by the reality of the Hermetica's actual age. See, Hermes as an early Christian-era mythic figure became less important as Christianity spread and solidified its doctrine. Until the 1440s, Hermes Trismegistus was largely overlooked or treated as a quaint figure from antiquity. Then, in 1471, a philosopher named Marsilio Pacino published the recently rediscovered Corpus Hermeticum. The results were incendiary and would go on to push all of Western civilization itself into a bold new future. For roughly the following 200 years, philosophers, esotericists, magicians, scientists, and mathematicians believed that the Corpus Hermeticum had indeed been authored by a man named Hermes Trismegistus. They believed this figure was older than the Western world, had been delivered divine wisdom from the gods, and had bestowed this knowledge to mankind by way of the Hermetica. Astute readers will no doubt notice that the above time frame nestles itself perfectly into the Western world's most enlightening period, the Renaissance, a Hermetic Renaissance. The publication of the Corpus Hermeticum entirely shook the Renaissance world. Thinkers like John Dee, Isaac Newton, and many other middle-aged characters whose names and deeds went in to perform the modernity that we are and have, to varying degrees enthralled with and motivated by the Hermetic philosophy contained within it. It, in part, motivated Isaac Newton to dive headlong into alchemy following the publication of his most famous work, The Mathematical Principles of Nature and Philosophy, the Principia. It was the bedrock of the philosophy of the time, which went on to be crucial to the development of the Western world. Some even claim that in this time Hermes replaced Plato as the most important philosopher to the development of enlightening thinking. In short, he was everywhere, and his tools, alchemy, magic, astrology, theurgy, etc., informed the brightest minds of the day for nearly 200 years. Unfortunately, the Renaissance-era fascination with Hermes as a historical figure began to crumble in 1614, when linguistic analysis revealed that the Hermetica's actual time of origin was likely in the 1st or 2nd century AD, or CE, in Greek Alexandria. This meant that not only were the texts not written by Hermes, but that they were likely penned by an early Christian, which is in part why they resonated with the Renaissance-era Hermeticists. Following this, the Church actively began persecuting Hermetic thought and thinkers. The chief problem was with the Hermetic practice of theurgy. We might better recognize theurgic acts today by terms like invocation, evocation. Essentially, theurgy was an attempt to manifest divine powers through a variety of internal and external rites, rituals, and acts. Hermetic theology claimed that the ultimate state of transformation was to become like a god oneself. Hermes in the Arab world. As his reputation became increasingly rejected, criticized, and attacked in the Christian West, the myth of Hermes Trismegistus continued to spread in the Muslim world. The Arabs drew connections with Hermes and a god within their traditions, Idris. In northern Mesopotamia, a city called Haran assumed vital importance in the ancient world as a trading hub, marketplace of ideas via a well-known university and cultural epicenter. As the Christian persecution of non-monotheists intensified in places like Alexandria, several thinkers, philosophers, magicians, occultists, etc., found their way to Haran, and along with them, the Corpus Hermeticum. They helped to make Haran a pagan stronghold whose core philosophies were multicultural, esoteric, and polytheistic. Pagan thought was so deeply entrenched in Haran that early Christians even came to refer to the city as City of Pagans, following a failed attempt to convert the population. By the 9th century CE, Haran had come under Muslim rule and was forced to establish itself as among the religions protected by the Quran. Haranians settled on being referred to as Sabians and included both Hermes Trismegistus and their collection of Hermetic texts as among their holy works and men. For a time, Hermes was again alive and influential in a vibrant ancient city. The Hermetic surge in the Arab world would go on to last for a few hundred years before ultimately being stomped out by rising Muslim fundamentalism. But its spread in the city of Haran was vital in the effort to keep Hermes alive, as the Christian world increasingly vilified, maligned, and punished all those who continued to believe in Hermes Trismegistus. What happened to Hermes Trismegistus? How he shaped the modern world? The spread of Hermetic thought in the Arab world helped to ensure its continued proliferation. But this did not come without a long period of Hermeticism and esotericism generally being driven underground. The era following the revelation of the true age of the Hermetic texts saw the Church move headlong into the Reformation. Among other things, this meant that thinkers like Hermes were entirely unwelcome in the new Christian world. The brilliant minds who had once embraced Hermetic philosophy now turned from it altogether as the world entered a new era of humanism, less concerned with a divine relationship and more with rhetoric, logic, and the like. This, along with church persecution, meant that there wasn't a place for our old friend Hermes Trismegistus in the Western world. For the following centuries, the Hermetic myth would be kept alive by secret orders, philosophers, and alchemists. However, Hermes wouldn't re-enter the popular esoteric lexicon until the metaphysical surge of the Transcendental period. Ideas like mesmerism, pantheism, and the exaltation of the natural world were on the rise. Out of this mix arose the minds directly responsible for the creation and popularization of Western esotericism. These include Madame Helena Blavatsky, Aleister Crowley, Gerald Gardner, and many more. While not alive during this era, each of these players was directly inspired by the resurgence of Hermetic philosophy. These ideas, along with many others, would go on to form the bedrock of the Western magical tradition. Well, there you have a very comprehensive yet contemporary Cliff Notes version of the history of Hermes Trismegistus. In short, a mythic figure who probably didn't exist, but nonetheless, not unlike the prophets and deities that other people may believe in. Just because it is not provable in being real, there is no harm in, say, emulating the teachings of a fictional character, because the value is in the lessons of the thing. And if you follow them and those values aid you in loving your fellow man and bringing more and doing more for your family, yourself, your communities, then it doesn't really matter. But I really did enjoy this deep exploration, this sort of comprehensive overview of a very academic presentation to the article from Ancient Origins, which was a little bit more fantastical, looking at Mackey's, what he had to say about the character, and then eventually looking at this contemporary summarization of the origin through where we stand today with the character, the archetype of Hermes Trismegistus. For the Craftsman Plus, tell us about the craziest Masonic conspiracy you have ever heard. I know that's not really related to the articles, but I thought as we're nearing Halloween, it might be fun to talk about some other topics that were a little bit more interesting, fun, and we can have a laugh or investigate even more on. So again, for the Craftsman Plus, tell me about the most ridiculous or scary conspiracy theory regarding Freemasonry you've ever heard is. That's it for this week. One more time, I want to thank all of the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. If you would like to learn more about how you can assist the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your different options. We've also got a shop and a bookstore through Amazon links. All of those proceeds go right back into the creation of this show. I will hopefully see you all at MasonicCon South coming right up. And if I saw you at Grand Lodge Sessions, thank you so much for a wonderful time, great fellowship, and a harmonious sessions. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Okay, girl.